This is the Anderson Files on PodClip. The Anderson Files is a look at commerce, investment, economics, and retirement issues that affect each and every one of you. Your host is Mike Anderson, Executive Vice President, Retirement Services, and partner of Finestone Partners. Finestone Partners is an independent firm with securities offered through Four Point Capital. And now your host, Mike Anderson.
Welcome, and our topic today is looking at American savers, retirees and near retirees, and their decision-making with their retirement dollars. Our guest today is Catherine Roy. Catherine, welcome.
Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
Catherine is Managing Director and Chief Retirement Strategist and Head of Individual Retirement for J.P. Morgan Funds. In this role, Catherine is responsible for delivering timely personal retirement-related insights to financial advisors, focused on the retirement income-related landscape for more than 10 years. She specializes in identifying themes, strategies, and the solutions that help advisors successfully partner with individuals in the transition and distribution life stages. Catherine is a top speaker at national and regional conferences and is frequently interviewed and quoted in the financial press. To get started, you know, over the last several years, you've taken many deep dives looking at the behavior and decision-making of American savers, near retirees, retirees, and here we are in the age of a COVID-19 pandemic, bringing about historic market volatility. We can't even calculate yet the damage on the economy. You know, how are retirement plan participants reacting, and what's their behavior, as you can decipher to this point?
I think it's a very good question, and it's kind of surprising that we're having this level of volatility, you know, just 12 years after the Great Recession. But I think our initial reads, you know, although it's important to caveat, it's very preliminary. We're in the early innings of this. We've looked at taking a look at March behaviors. We're starting to analyze April. And, you know, March may not be indicative of the full spectrum because we have to remember, like, I was working in Manhattan up till the 13th of March and things were fairly normal. So the second half of March really is probably going to be a better indicator, as well as April. But the initial indications that we're hearing, both from, you know, participants in plans that we are responsible for, also our partners and other record keepers, are that, you know, participants are seeking advice. There's a lot, quite an uptick in inbound calls, you know, request for clarification and understanding, but not a lot of action yet. But again, as I mentioned, we're in those early innings. We would anticipate that as time goes on, and as more participants, you know, potentially are impacted, we are likely to see withdrawal activity pick up. What we saw in 08 and 09, though, if we try to kind of turn back the clocks and see a history lesson from the past and not so distant past, what we typically see is loans tend to slow down and withdrawals pick up. And that was slight in 2008. But we have to remember that the CARES Act gives that withdrawal option without the penalty, which is a new tactic. It's been used in natural disasters, but has not been really done at a national level before. It wasn't available in 08, 09, again, to take that hardship withdrawal, you know, with no penalty. And so we'll see how that kind of new access or different way to access your retirement assets, given, unfortunately, retirement plans often are people's only source of funds in times like this, given lack of emergency reserve funds. You know, we might see an uptick that might be greater than 08, 09. So our message, really, that we've been talking a lot to participants about and plan sponsors is trying to help them stay invested, focus on staying invested, you know, not timing the market, not having loss aversion take over, where if we have those rocky bad days, you know, the tendency to want to take control and get out of the market, you often miss some of those best days that follow, you know, even on the very next day. And we've got examples of that in March where, you know, a really bad day happened on March 12th, a really great day happened on March 13th. You know, so staying invested is important, as well as keeping contributing. That's one thing that we did see in 08, 09. People continued to contribute because it's really a beneficial feature of the 401k system, you have this automatic payroll deferral. It gives you that discipline to buy into market, you know, through that volatility. It happens. You don't have to think about it, and that discipline really can, you know, help people recover. I think two last things here. You know, we have created a hierarchy of withdrawal for funding needs, really trying to focus people on the other options that may be available to them before they think about tapping their retirement accounts, so that they keep their retirement strategy on track. And then something we're waiting to see on, lastly, is, you know, there has been a big push in the 401k and DC plan space, employers focused on employee wellness, and a lot of discussion and effort around helping people, you know, build up emergency reserve funds, you know, potentially have access to sidecar accounts. And so I think we've come some way there, but we'll see if those types of activities up till now, you know, also, you know, provide some protection to keep retirement assets intact as we go through this.
Do you think with the transactions that you've seen, that you've witnessed within JP Morgan, you know, in March compared to April, that the panic level has tailed off in April as far as making a panic decision to go to cash, to sell stocks? Have you seen it kind of cooling down to a certain degree from what data that you have so far?
There was a flurry, obviously, in March, early April, when the market was most volatile. You know, a flurry of inbound requests for really outreach, right? So I can definitely say, you know, as we wait for that participant data to be able to actually see exactly, you know, if there was a material difference between March and April, we did see kind of a calming down in mid to late April for, you know, less interest in getting on the phone and talking about the market volatility and what to do and stay the course. And, you know, kind of cautioning participants or giving, you know, participants things to think about relative to the market specifically. We've seen, you know, a shift to, you know, how do we potentially use this as, you know, an opportunity to refocus people on what they can control, you know, that savings message, you know, is an
right.
important element there, right? So I think that it goes back to that kind of flurry of activity relative to thirst for information, thirst for understanding what happened last time we went through this. That has calmed down to some degree.
Yeah, one more unexpected event that occurred over the last couple of months was the drop in oil going negative. And it, you know, from my client base and working with participants in qualified plans, you know, it's one more factor of uncertainty, panic, something that's never happened before. And I'm with you that it's one historic event after another. And, you know, with that, you know, the scale of this pandemic is unique in modern times. Are you finding some unique participant behaviors, things that participants, near retirees, savers, the retired just have not done in the past?
So we've seen, I can give an answer to that in a second. I think there are some hypotheses, though, that we'll need to think through. I mean, one thing that the CARES Act has provided, you know, in addition to, you know, the ability to withdraw without the penalty, is this idea of a three-year option, meaning if I make a withdrawal this year, I have 3 years to pay it back. That's something that's definitely different from what has been passed in the past, or what has been available to participants in the past.
Right.
Initial indications, though, are that the withdrawals that we've seen have been very small, so less than, you know, 0.5% or 0.25% of plan assets, and a very small percentage of participants, I think about 0.5% of participants have been affected that have done that. So small right now. We'll see how that changes as time goes on. But I think what could be different in the future, given this ability to repay it, is that people may have the opportunity or may choose to do that, which we think is really important to emphasize as we potentially get into more of a recovery mode. You know, really to remind people, you know, don't just pay the tax, you know, over the remaining 2 or 3 years. Hopefully they will be at that point in a more positive place. Think about it instead, you know, putting more back into your account. What we have seen that is very different this time, and this is using de-identified data that we track from a Chase, you know, household perspective, spending, You know, and this is very different from 08, 09 in that, you know, you do have this shelter in place and people are staying home. And so we do see a very steep drop off in March, actually, because we haven't yet gotten the April data, but a very steep drop off, particularly for older households related to travel, transportation, entertainment spending. You know, we really did see older households pull back a lot more drastically than younger households more quickly, which is, you know, I think really important because they have the largest wealth at risk. And so their ability to pull back and potentially, you know, not tap their portfolios or draw on them if they're in retirement is going to be really important to their outcome. We did see a slight uptick in food and beverage. We'll see if that continues, but not as much as we might think given, you know, some of the hoarding. And I know the number of times I've gone to the grocery store recently is way off the charts. So I think that's different. And so we would anticipate that for those who continue to receive income, so have uninterrupted employment, we really are expecting to see higher savings as a result of these categories dropping. And I think that goes to your kind of your oil analysis, too. My dad sends me these pictures or these corny cartoons related to the pandemic to help us kind of laugh a little bit about it. And one of it is oil prices are at an all-time low, but we can't go anywhere. So, you know, I think those that kind of reduction in spending can be helpful through this time as well. And then one last point in terms of what's different now than in the past is that we have had these auto programs mandated in certain states across the United States. So, you know, a population that hasn't been covered by an employer plan at this point, typically small businesses, you know, being mandated or encouraged to auto-enroll their employees into what is essentially a Roth IRA, you know, they've had really good, you know, take up in terms of inertia helping people stay enrolled. You know, given how much small businesses are impacted right now, it'll be interesting to see if those accounts stay intact or if they too operate a little bit like an emergency reserve fund for individuals who are impacted. And so therefore we need to, I think, maybe rethink, you know, is that really a strategy for retirement savings, or, you know, would a larger employer plan or something like that, to that effect, be something that would be more helpful, you know, to those individuals longer term to really protect their retirement savings through times like this?
You're listening to The Anderson Files on PodClips. I'm your host, Mike Anderson, with guest Catherine Roy. With future possible additional stimulus coming from the federal government, that could also include additional changes to retirement plan rules. And one proposal coming under what's being referred to as the Savers Act, where annual participant contribution levels will be doubled or tripled for 401k plans, IRAs. I know that is going through Congress now. Have you looked at that as a good thing? And, you know, what one additional piece that's designed, at least so far, to sunset at the end of this year or pandemic period? I'm kind of the thought that those contribution levels, annual contribution limits, should be permanent. What do you think about that piece of what's coming up, or at least being discussed?
Well, I think, you know, helping people have the opportunity to save as much as they can is always a good thing, right? We know that that's the key driver to successful, you know, retirement outcome is really the savings behavior. Investing is important, but, you know, the savings is the main driver. And I think it all comes down to the tax, you know, implications relative to that and you know, the revenue that might mean. And I'd also like to balance it, though, with, you know, Social Security. And one of the things we've been looking at the last week or so with the Social Security Trustees report that just came out, you know, obviously that report did not reflect any of the current environment, and it is fairly, the 2020, you know, assessment of Social Security is very similar to 2019, really only minor changes, a little bit on the positive side, though, whereas in last year's report we were beginning or forecasted to begin to tap the trust fund this year, that actually got moved out to next year, so Social Security was getting a little bit, you know, brighter in terms of its outlook. It still was on track to be depleted by 2035. And I guess the question becomes, if we have continued high unemployment for the rest of this year, you know, even at our current levels, if you assume kind of median salaries alone, right, you assume that everybody's unemployed as a median earner, You know, we have about a 10% hit to the revenue going into Social Security because there aren't payroll taxes being collected on those workers and their employer isn't matching them. And so, you know, back in 08, 09, there was the payroll tax holiday that, you know, Congress made whole in terms of taking out of the Treasury and putting the money into Social Security so Social Security didn't miss a year. You know, I think it's one thing to help people save more who can. I think it's another, you know, those who have been impacted from an employment perspective. We know Social Security is so important for most Americans, and so, you know, taking a look at that side is probably going to be important as well.
Catherine, comparing today to the 2008-2009 market decline, do you see differences in participant behavior compared to the last bear market?
Yeah, I think initially we don't, and we hope not to. I think if you go back to 08, 09, which we did. Again, I mentioned, you know, we took a look at what worked or didn't work as lessons learned through a similar period of market volatility and disruption from an economic perspective. I think what surprised me, and this is using ICI data, the Investment Company Institute, that, you know, has access to millions of participants that they've tracked. And looking back at their data, you know, it shows clearly that, you know, 97% of plan participants through 08 and 09 kept contributing, right? They didn't stop, reduce, you know, their contributions. They kept chugging along, which we know is hugely helpful. And then probably more surprising to me is 85% of them stayed the course. They didn't make any sort of investment changes. They didn't flee to cash, you know, like we're concerned retail investors typically do. And so that actually resulted in a pretty, I think, positive outcome, if that's possible, through that time, and that is, you know, it surprised me that by the end of 2010, DC plan account values had recovered and were above their 2007 peak. So, you know, that kind of consistent savings, which again is a key benefit of the 401k system or DC system, consistent savings and that staying the course really did help people, you know, recover quite quickly. It felt, I know it felt for many of us that it took longer than that, and so I was surprised that by 2010, and end of 2010, you know, that was the case. This time, I would say, though, you know, volatility is greater, and I think that has implications for, you know, more participants maybe, quote-unquote, taking control and you know, getting out of the market, which we hope they won't do, again, to benefit from those good days. And so what we mean by that is, you know, we have a chart that shows the impact of being out of the market, and if you miss some of the best days, you know, the impact on your return over the last 20 years. Right. And, you know, we took a deep dive into that chart, and what's really interesting is, again, how close the best and worst days are together. The dominant order is that the worst days come first. So the worst day, which you don't have a crystal ball and understand is coming, you know, typically happens, but the loss aversion can kick in terms of I've lost, you know, a big part of my, or a painful part of my nest egg. I want to take control and avoid losing more. So that's when people typically step in and maybe make adjustments. And we know that those following days can be quite positive. And so, for example, in March, Marty mentioned, I think the 12th of March was one of the third worst day in the last 20 years. It was followed by the 13th, which was one of the top three best days in the last 20 years. And then Monday, the 16th, was, I think, the worst day in the last 20 years. So, and that's over 20 years. That is extreme levels of volatility. If you're replacing kind of the leaderboard of best and worst days, you know, with three days in a row and displacing 01, 02, 03 values and many of the 08 values, you know, that's just really a different experience. So, you know, we were hoping that, you know, we'll be able to add to the 08, 09 kind of success story and say, even during times of that more extreme volatility, you know, we're seeing participants stay the course.
Yeah, and you know, the month of March. That the average percentage move either down or up in that market overall, it was the most volatile month in the history of the markets from the data that I've seen going all the way back to even November of 1929. And you know, as difficult as it was, you know, a 3-4% drop in the market on a single day, you know, I hate to say it, but we kind of got used to it. Very difficult. And as you said, you know, the down days were followed by record up days. And we saw the recovery in April and markets a little bit more stable here in May. But the volatility factor, unprecedented. Obviously, it unhinged, understandably, a lot of American savers. And, you know, with that, do you see, as far as things currently different, involving payroll tax and Social Security, do you see tie-ins to that as well?
You know, in terms of volatility relative to those things, or can I clarify that for me?
Right. So, you know, one of the things that is currently different from our outline, that the payroll tax for Social Security is continuing, I'll bet, yep, delayed for the employer to make their match. Could you detail that a little bit further as far as your thought on that?
Sure. Yeah. So very good point. So I think that the, you know, with the CARES Act proposal or the passing, proposal through to passing, we were anticipating that there might be a payroll tax holiday again across the board. And so what we found positive about the way in which Congress pursued that is that they're giving employers, you know, delayed opportunities to pay the payroll tax, you know, to the end, you know, delaying until the end of the year and into next year what they owe, so hopefully giving them some relief, but not total relief, right, in terms of, you know, still having that commitment. And so in the absence of, you know, Congress stepping in and making that contribution, you know, for that employer, that's kind of
right,
a good compromise, right? So I think that's positive. I think what you know, in terms of what we mentioned before, I think the level of unemployment though is so high, if it is sustained for a long time, the loss of the individual, you know, for the unemployed people, both the individual and the employer's contribution isn't being made. So that could have a pretty significant dent in, you know, the revenue that's going into Social Security, and could, you know, have the trust funds, you know, be touched this year, which wasn't anticipated again until next year, and could, you know, make the trust funds depletion more expedient than what was originally being forecasted. So, you know, I think taking a look at, you know, what happens to underlying benefit given these employment dynamics, even with the CARES Act giving that deferral opportunity to employers, is going to be an important thing to take a look at.
The recovery of participant account values coming out of 2008, 2009, market decline, on average, how long did that take? You know, with someone holding primarily stocks, do you see, at least so far, a similar pattern developing in our current situation?
I think the recovery may be rebounding a little bit more quickly this time, but when we look at 2008-09, if we just look at the S&P 500, it took from the bottom of in 08, I think it was March of 08, to March of 2012 for the S&P to recover back to its peak from 2007. So we know that obviously diversification is important. So when you look at a 60-40 portfolio through that period of time, it recovered in October of 2010, so much more quickly. It didn't drop as far, obviously, because you had 40% in bonds, and it recovered more quickly by October of 2010, so, you know, a year and a half more quickly. And if you continued saving, which, again, back to what most participants did, by March of 2010, you know, people would have been, you know, fully back to their pre, you know, 2007 high. And so we know that, you know, back then, and it's still true today for some older households, there is a heavy bias towards equities, or a heavier bias in equities at potentially ages where that may not be, you know, the best consideration relative to how close those households might be to their retirement. So one of the things we know that's clearly different between 08, 09 and now is the growth of target date funds as the, you know, the dominant default. And, you know, so many plan sponsors have put that into their plans, done their due diligence around them. And so we know that target date funds have grown 10 times since then. And so if you think about it, you know, a plan world where participants are hopefully right risked based upon being either defaulted into or re-enrolled to a target date fund, you know, we would anticipate that, again, if they stay the course, like 85% of participants did last time, that they would experience, you know, a similar recovery given the diversification benefits that that target date fund is providing to them. And one last point here, when you do look at the, you know, historical view, you clearly do see that long-tenured, higher account balance, older households or individuals, you know, they have the most wealth at risk. They have the largest account balances. They've been contributing their entire life. And so what we saw with obviously large drawdowns is that they did see a bigger hit to their account balances. But the good news is that they recovered just about as quickly. So again, if they stayed the course, you know, the amount that's at risk can also have the benefit of those positive days, and so staying the course is going to be important then as well. But I think what's different now is really that risk level. We know that older households typically have owned more equities or maybe aren't in target date funds because they've made their own investment directions. That may make sense, but, you know, some plan sponsors or individuals might want to think about, look, am I really the right person to be determining my risk level given how close I am to retirement? You know, should I give that over to professionals who, you know, may have a better sense of that? So our hope is that maybe the drawdown this time for those older households that were in target date structures that helped them de-risk to some degree greater than they might have in the past, that, you know, they'll be in a better position, you know, to transition and live in retirement as a result of that.
Catherine, thanks so much for the time today. To share your thoughts, to share your research, your insight. I would love to have you back at some point in the future to share more as not only COVID-19 pandemic era unfolds, but beyond.
I'd be very happy to. This is a pleasure. Thank you.
This is Mike Anderson for the Anderson Files. Thanks to Daryl Wayne at the controls, Mark Allen as our producer. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to The Anderson Files with Mike Anderson. Visit us at podclip.io and check on the financial box for more information on The Anderson Files.